Merba l-semija ta' kem pus 103.7, Emanuel Buttigieġ u Liam Gawċi jilqaw l-semija għal episodju ieħor ta' Taħdita Clio. U illum jingħu Liam, vera bi pjaċir kbir għandna magħna mistieden speċjali ħafna li anki ġim il-bot, mhux apposta għall-programm, però la darba kien qiegħed Malta ma stajniex naħallu jaħrab l-opportunità u x'Liam illi nintervistawh. U appuntu għandna magħna l-Sur John Gatt. Biex nintroduċi ftit, is-Sur Gatt kien emigra mal-familja tiegħu lejn l-Awstralja fl-1951 kienet għandu kien għandu żgħir ħafna. Meta kien hemmhekk beda l-interess fil-kollezzjonar tal-muniti li għandhom x'jaqsmu mal-Ordni ta' Malta. U bad semminna kif nannu tiegħu kien anke jaddilu munita, anke se nitkellmu naqra iktar fuq hekk. U bad minn hemm beda aktar interess isu sistematiku, sa ma beda mbagħad biex bejwet fl-2006 jikteb b'mod iktar rigorus u ordnat u dan wassal għal pubblikazzjoni ta' ktieb impressjonanti ħafna fl-2018 li jismu appuntu Coins Minted by the Knights in Malta, a comprehensive catalogue 1530 to 1798. Li kif ħana raw minkejja li jusemmih comprehensive, però qed jaħdem fuq it-tieni edizzjoni tiegħu, so it will be even more comprehensive la darba jasal dak ukoll. Mela John, grazzi ħafna tal-li qiegħed magħna u l-issemmija ngħidulhom li dan l-episodju u li segwi għax fil-fatt ma' John ħankunu naqsmu żewġ episodi ħajkunu bl-Ingliż anke għal beneficju ta' John ma nagħdux anke naqilbu mil-lingwa l-oħra. So, John, a great welcome to you. It's a real pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for you. That's a new experience for me, tell the truth.
It's an honor for us that you are here, John. Manuel.
I knew of the book because Liam had actually shown it to me and in an earlier program quite some time ago. Now we had actually discussed it. And then I came to know we have the website. And you're quite good at social media, which is useful because you put up a post on Facebook saying that from Australia you're going to be in Malta. And I thought, said to Liam, you know, we really can't let this opportunity pass and not get John over. I mean, have the man himself to talk about yep. this amazing work. So maybe we can start with a little bit about you, John. You went to Australia, you were very young.
18 months.
So that's more or less the main reality, you know, Australia. But obviously your roots to Malta, your parents, your family must have made them known to you and therefore instilled the interest in you to have that link and eventually you zoomed on coins.
Obviously, I knew I was Maltese, but luckily we lived where a lot of other Maltese were. So we got to meet and talk with Maltese. In fact, when I was starting school, my mother was working in that stage, and she would wake us up in the morning with breakfast in bed, and she would tell us what she wanted to do for the rest of the day, us to do in Maltese, and then she would repeat it again in English to make sure we knew.
That's a way to learn Maltese. That's quite ingenious of her.
Well, unfortunately, at later years, we kind of moved away from the normal Maltese, and of course, most Maltese would speak English and.
Yeah, and that's
the loss of language progress that way, I'm afraid.
I see. John, but coins. Why coins?
Good question. Firstly, my mother used to be involved with the local church.
Okay.
And they used to have a fundraising thing every week that each family would put in a few shillings in those days.
Of course.
And they have a number they would pick, and if their number was picked, they get about half of the booty of the lot, and the church would get the rest. And my mother, the mother used me as her runaround boy.
Yeah, of course.
So I would go on a Saturday morning on my bike and go to Mrs. Ferrugia, Mrs. Bella, Mrs. this and that guy, all the Maltese.
Yeah,
I started collecting coins when at a wedding I found a small Italian lira, 5 lira.
Right. Okay.
And it was made out of aluminium. And I said, what the hell, you know, put me interested. And when I showed them to other people, they, especially the people I was visiting, they would say, oh, I got some coins, they're interested in, and they would give me Maltese coins, or, you know, or whatever. And then at a later time, when I was an altar boy, we and our house lived 2 houses away from the church. The local priest used to ask me and my brother to after the 10 o'clock mass to go and count the money.
Count the money.
And the priest knew, knowing I collected coins, all the foreign coins that we and we used lots of foreign coins, he would give to me.
All right.
So that, you know, that's how I started.
That's how it started.
So from 8 years on.
Okay. So it's very natural and organic the way it's come about.
But then it was the Knights of St. John.
Well.
So how did those come into the picture in Australia?
I knew about the Knights. I knew a bit of history. I've always been interested in history, but I never knew they minted their own coins. I was very passionate on coin collecting. As I mentioned to you before, I collected Australian, New Zealand, Canadian, UK and USA. But I always first bought the book. And all the books I had were never before 1800. And of course, Malta never appeared on my books. I just didn't know that they minted.
Of course.
In 1976, my grandfather, Amadeus D'Agostino, came to Malta to visit family. And of course, it was the first time that we had met realistically, the baby. Yeah. No.
He came to Australia.
He came to Australia to visit the family. Uh-huh. And it was the first time my mother met him since we left in 51.
Wow.
So he knew I collected coins, so he brought with him a De Rowan Grano, and it was dated 1776, so it was 200 years old. And that totally changed my focus.
All right.
This was a coin with my history.
That's a lovely coincidence that the coin was 1776 and he came in 1976.
Yes.
And the big question, do you still own the coin?
My oath, I do. Not on my sale list.
It's not. it's that important. It's that important.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so, you know, the coins minted by the order are some of the loveliest coins ever minted.
Correct.
In my humble opinion, maybe we're biased because it's Malta.
We're allowed to be biased.
We're allowed to be biased, yes. So, you know, when you start seeing how many coins, different coins have been minted, the gold, the copper, the silver, I think it blew your mind, probably.
I've been collecting for over 50 years, and it's been a progression. As I get more coins, I get more details, get more interest. I notice specific attributes to this coin or that coin. So my knowledge has been growing all the time. And by the process of writing a book makes you look more deeper into the product itself.
A methodological approach will make you naturally, you have to be an expert on what you're writing.
Correct.
So, well, I'd like us to go back to that moment in 1976 when your grandfather presents you with this coin. What did you do? You still remember what you first thought of it? What you made
of
it?
Well, firstly, it was a Grano, and of course, a Grano. When the English came, it was 1/3 of 1 farthing.
Right.
So my mum used to say, "That a bit."
Uh huh.
We would buy a loaf of bread or whatever it was, and you realise that, again, I grew up in the pre-decimal parts of Australia, and we had pennies and shillings like the Maltese had with the English.
Uh-huh.
So I knew what the value of that was. You know, a penny, that was 1/24th of a penny.
I guess.
So I said, this is only history. It's not valuable, but it was history, you know.
Mm-hmm. and you immediately thought something was special, though, about it.
It was where I come from.
Yeah.
It's your roots.
It's my roots, yeah. Mm.
And so from then, how did it start? How did you go for the second coin? How did you how did you choose what you're going to collect?
Firstly, I was just working in as a traineeship and then as an estimator. So I used to go to local coin dealers, but you expect to know that you wouldn't find Maltese coins in Australia. But one day I went to a local dealer, and sure enough, he had 5 15 taries of Pinto, all different varieties. And I bought them all for about 30 or 40 pounds in those days, okay? No, $60.
Yeah.
And then you start look at the coins, and why are they all different? You know, the coins that we have, they're all the same, but these are different and noticeably different from coin to coin. And that got me thinking, you know, there must be lots more. And luckily, I got into sales and marketing, and then I was general manager of a company in Australia, or actually two companies, one in Australia, one in New Zealand. And I travelled a lot around the world.
Mm.
And if I'm in somewhere over the weekend or something, my first thing is to find out where the coin shops are. And especially in Europe, I had more chance, and I did buy more nicer Malta coins in Germany, France, Italy, Spain, England, uh-huh. You know, and that grew my collection up.
Did you have a plan in mind of how this was going to develop, or at first was it a bit more whatever catches your eye mostly?
Basically, the way it's reason to develop is because, for instance, the emergence of the internet and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The internet just opened the whole world up out to you. I recall in the early days, a company I ran had fax machines, and I got a list of all the fax numbers of all the dealers, you know, and I started to fax them all, you know, hello, my name's John Gatt. If you have any nice and Malta coins, please contact me on this number and that kind of stuff. Never got much coins out of it, but it got me involved. And then when the internet came, you know, I think I started eBay in about 1985 or something like that, very early, you know.
Wow.
But, yeah, that's how it came about.
Mm. And then you develop like a network of people, shops that you know are go-to for these kind of things?
Yes. I found two other collectors in Australia, which was exciting.
Okay.
Yeah. Both Maltese. And I started getting coins here, there, and everywhere. but about 2006, I started to get frustrated because I was collecting all the Knights of Malta coins. I was specializing at that stage on the 30 tari coin. That's a large silver crown size coin. A good third of them, half of them maybe, were not listed in any catalogues, and that frustrated me because I like to put things in the right pockets and that kind of stuff. That's why I started thinking about maybe I have to write my own catalogue.
Your own book,
yeah,
your own catalogue,
yeah, uh-huh. And that's how it started. But
So we're looking. Obviously, right now in the studio, we've got a copy of your book, which I would like you to tell us if any of the listeners are interested, where they can contact you online so that you can send them the book. First of all, that's more so they can buy the book from you, obviously, which will be your website is
www, of course, Coins of Malta, Coins plural, COINS of Malta, one word. .com.
And we're looking at this opus of a book, which we have an exclusive on our program, which you're going to tell us all about of what's next for this book. But so how long did it take you to get to this stage?
From the date I first decided was going to look at making a book, I first started to look at only the 30 tari coins. And while every time I was in Europe, I would make it to make an effort to come to Malta just for a few days, visit family and that kind of stuff. And I met during that time two of the leading numismatists, and for those who don't know, numismatists are a coin collector from Malta, a Mr. Azapati and a Mr. Samut. I met Mr. Azapati by chance. I was going up Zachary Street, and his shop was there. And
ironically, it was Zachary Street. It was where obviously we have a lot of information about some coin exchange shops that were in Zachary Street.
Yes, Sades were the main one.
Yes,
and I was going. I had met Mr. Samut in Australia when he spoke at the local Maltese club in Melbourne about coins. And he told me about his book, because in those days I didn't know there was books around.
Right.
He told me he had books. He told me where he could buy them. And so happens that my brother Mario was in Malta at the time. I contacted him and he says, buy me a copy of these books. And he did, and brought them back. But I tried looking for him. So I was going up Zachary Street because I know where Sades were. And Sades were the people who printed the book for Samut and Rustali, the other person who wrote the book. But I stopped in at a shop beforehand and it so happened at the counter was Emmanuel as a party. As happened to. So I went to Sades and asked him, can I contact Mr. Samut? They said, oh, we can't give you his phone number. So I said, well, could you please tell him who it is? Tell him I met him in Australia and could you contact me? Which he did. And he was at his holiday house in St. Paul's Bay at that time. So I went there, had a meal with him and his wife, and we got very close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Mr. Zapati both encouraged me to do a whole book of all the coins in Malta, not only the 30 tari.
Right.
So that's the reason I went, you know.
For someone who is not a numismatist.
Numismatist.
Hard word to say.
It is.
Why did you start off thinking I want to focus on the 30 tari? How does one make such a decision?
Well,
I'm curious.
It is a very impressive coin. It's a very big coin in size, you can see a lot of details, you know. So I just focused on that for some reason. I don't know why, really, but I did collect all the other coins. But if a 30 tari came up on for sale, I would.
That's what you
really wanted, you know.
That's fascinating.
I have so many questions because we have been in touch and in contact for a few years now, and I actually still remember the day that you came over to the Maritime Museum and we started talking coins. But I wanted to start off because obviously. We have another 7 minutes for this program to go thereabouts. Coins, the Knights of St. John, how did they do it? And why did they do it? So they arrived here in 1530.
Rightio.
Let's start off from there.
Well, can I start a bit earlier than 1530?
Mm-hmm.
You're the expert.
They started minting coins in 1318 while they were in Rhodes.
Rhodes,
right.
When they were evicted out of Rhodes in 1522, they were looking for somewhere to house themselves and get strength to retake Rhodes again. After about 8 or 9 years going around in circles, they were given Malta and the city of Tripoli.
Yep.
And they moved into Malta in, as he said, 1530, with the intention of strengthening themselves up to attack and regain Rhodes.
Rhodes.
But they also knew that the Turkish they would want to attack Malta, so they started to put money into Malta and fix all the fortresses and so forth and so on. When the Knights of Malta came in, it is said, and this was via Emmanuel Magro Conte, he was said that there was a mint on the main ship, the Santa Anna.
The Santa Anna.
Yeah.
Carrack.
The Carrack. Yeah. They said there was a mint on that ship. I don't know why they would do it, but there was. So anyhow, they started minting coins in Birgul.
Immediately, practically.
Probably immediately. Mm. And I've got some coins listed there that are copper coins, and they are regarded by the previous experts that they were coins of a granny denomination. I not dispute it, but the coins' weights are too different to do that. But my assumption was they were minted maybe during the siege in Rhodes.
Okay.
Wow.
And they brought the coins back to Malta. But a few years later, they found a zucchini, which they can be certain was actually minted in Malta.
Mm.
Okay.
Wow. So the Knights, let's start off, they brought with them the know-how, the technology, and also the infrastructure, even legally.
Yes, yes.
To be able to mint coins. In my humble opinion, it is quite something, quite the symbol that a small, let's say, state like Malta can now mint its own coins in 1530. It makes for a lot of thinking.
There was a lot of trouble. Originally, they weren't going to be allowed to mint their coins. And Leslie Adam virtually sent the gift of the Malta back to the king. Says, well, we can't mint coins. Mm. We don't want it. Eventually, it was resolved.
And look how important coins are.
Oh yes, it's a part. It is a image of yourself as a country,
your state,
as
nationhood.
That's right. Yeah.
Which goes to show that from the beginning, the Knights really want to impress the fact that they're sovereign here. No?
Yes,
that,
sovereignty.
Yes, they're leasing Malta technically, but nevertheless, they want to imprint that they are sovereign, and what better way to do it than coins, effectively.
Correct.
So, Lil Adam has coins which are being minted in Rhodes and minted in Malta. So, there is this crossover.
And some other coins minted in between.
In transition.
Ah. Lil Adam went around to his the people that had to meet the kings and the popes, and he minted coins in gold and silver as presentation pieces.
I see.
Oh. These, and they're shown in my book, that these two coins were used as presentation, so they're very, very rare.
I imagine, yeah.
Be three or four of each one, if that.
If that.
Wow.
And they're found locally, or
The museum at the Archaeology Museum in Republic Street has both of those two coins.
Okay. So Heritage Malta has. Okay.
And again, because we know that the Carraca Santana was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even orange trees, no one. Eh?
Yes, of course.
So I'm not too surprised that they had the mint on board and they're actually able to work it and everything, because that was the point. It was a mobile state at that point. So
yes, they
have to do it, they have to operate.
A state on the run, to speak.
Yeah.
And here, our last question, so we'll leave our listeners on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
The next guy who we will find in your book is Pierino del Ponte. I think someone who practically is forgotten in the annals of the order, especially in Malta.
He never arrived in Malta.
He never arrived, but he's got coins.
No, del Ponte. Sorry, he did.
Yes,
the other one. Sorry,
yes,
the one after. Yes, those coins were only recently found.
Tell us about it.
Well, he's only
so this before you came along, John. We didn't know about this. This is new stuff.
It so happened that the first coin that went for auction was sold from him. And then about 5 weeks later, I saw one on eBay. from a dealer in Argentina.
In Argentina.
And the dealer was a watchmaker or a watch repairer.
Okay.
And luckily, I stayed up until 2 o'clock in the morning and was bidding, and I had put a snipe bid on of $1,500. That was within 20 seconds of the end of the thing was overtaken. And I put in another bid within about 3 seconds ago for $8,000, but I only had to pay $1,400 because on eBay you only had to pay next level up.
Okay.
So I got a coin, and the other coin that was sold in Malta was sold for $40,000. So I've got a good deal out of it.
My goodness.
Quite a good deal. Yeah. And so we've got such a short reign for Grandmaster, but still
couple of months,
he wants to leave his impact.
Yes.
He wants to comment his coins.
So is it the case with every Grandmaster he will issue?
Well, only one Grandmaster never issued. That's the third one.
Didier de Saint-Gelais.
He died on his way to Malta.
So he never got the chance.
And he's one of two Grandmasters who are not buried at St. John's.
Mm. It's him and Hompesch.
And both of them, him and Hompesch, are buried in France.
I always forget that, but it's not important. We've got Google these days, so all our listeners can Google that. John, we are coming to the end of the first part of our program, and so we're going to stop here because there's so much more, and I want to ask you about all the adventures you go through to actually get your hands on some of these coins, and I'm sure we're going to start off with that. So on behalf of Manuel Buttigieg and myself, Liam Gauci, I would like to bid you farewell. We'll meet you next week at the same time, at the same place. See you then.